Welcome, everybody. This is the 21 and Sensory podcast with me, Emily, and this is episode 17. And this episode, I have a special guest on, and it's Thomas from at Asperger's Growth. So, Thomas, do you want to say hi?
Hi, guys. Thank you for having me on, Emily.
No worries. So I was on Thomas's podcast, which is the Thoughty Aughty podcast, which I recommend you check out. I think you've done loads of episodes. How many episodes have you done?
Nine.
I thought it was more than that, but yours are really long.
Yeah, the actual like podcasts are quite long, so I have trouble sort of chopping it down. But
and you have lots of guests as well, whereas this is the first time I've had a guest.
Oh, so you've done like podcasts, which are sort of like you chatting about topics and stuff.
Yeah, it's literally just been me talking. I've never had anyone on because I've never been that organised. But you said you'd like to come on, and I was like, yay, okay, that would be great.
I think there'd be a lot of, especially like on Instagram, I think there'd be a lot of people who would want to come onto your podcast, considering how many episodes you have.
Yeah, I should really kind of ask more people. I think you're definitely more proactive in that sense. You've always got someone kind of new on and stuff, and I need to catch up a bit. So do you want to kind of introduce who you are? Obviously, I've said your Instagram is at Asperger's Growth. Is it Asperger's Growth? Yeah. Do you want to kind of just do a little kind of intro on who you are and sort of when you set up your Instagram and stuff?
Mm-hmm. That sounds good. So my name is Thomas Henley, and I am a biomedical sciences graduate from the University of Manchester. I'm also a Commonwealth Gold taekwondo athlete from sort of my previous sporting experience. And I do a lot of work on YouTube, on the Asperger's Growth channel. I make videos about autism and mental health, which primarily draws from my own experiences with life as an autistic person and as a person with quite severe anxiety and depression. And I basically, with the Asperger's Growth channel and the 40 Aughty podcast, I try to raise awareness of autism and mental health in a way that is a little bit more personal than just sort of listing off like scientific information, like I know some sort of YouTubers do. And I've also got a few sort of channels and Instagram and social medias where I post some, you know, posts about autism and do little Instagram stories and stuff.
Okay. That was a really good introduction. Did a bit of everything there. So let's talk about, what do you want to talk about first? Do you want to talk about sort of your life a bit more and your diagnosis, or do you want to talk more about your social media and stuff? Where do you want to start?
Yeah, I could give an introduction to my life. I'm not the best with summaries.
That's all right, neither am I.
It's give me a chance to info dump on my life.
Yep, go for it.
So I was born. No, I'm joking. So I was always sort of a bubbly, sort of friendly, very hyperactive kid when I was younger, sort of pre-teenage years. And I never really had any difficulties outside of the odd sort of anxiety around socializing. But I had friends and I was happy and I was doing well academically. And there was a point where I started to feel a little bit like I was an alien, which I know that is something that many autistic people feel at some point in their life. And and I was struggling to understand, and my parents decided to take me to see a psychologist, or I think occupational therapist maybe. And they put me through some tests and stuff and all that. And my mum took me to McDonald's to get some of them Happy Meals. And nice. Yeah, chicken nuggets and chips, always a good staple diet, you know. Yeah. And she basically just told me that I was autistic, and she explained to me about all the things that autistic people generally find difficult. And I think it was probably the only time in my life up until that point where I'd cried tears of happiness, because it really just pulled everything, all my doubts and all my struggles together into one little neat little bundle that I could work on. And it made life a little bit more sort of tolerable and easy to understand. But when I got into high school, I thought that secondary school was going to be, you know, now and again I get sort of picked on by the older students. Now and again I'd have a few fights with some friends and stuff. And that happened for maybe the first 2 or 3 years. But when I got to the age of about 13, 14, I started to develop a lot of anxiety around everything. I became very withdrawn, I became very quiet and shy. And obviously, like people were worried about me, but you know, when you go into teenagehood, it's sort of, it's everyone's going to be different. Everyone's going to be a bit more self-conscious. And I didn't really realize quite to the extent of the anxiety that I felt until I started being picked on and bullied. And I kind of describe it like the feeling that I got when I was in teenagehood. It's like after one summer holiday, everyone had gone away and decided on these weird social rules that I had no clue about, and then came back and I was just in the same sort of spot, and I felt really isolated. I felt like everyone didn't understand me, I didn't understand them, and it generally made life really difficult, and I started to develop a lot of depression. I started self-harming a little bit too much. I developed a lot of sort of body dysmorphia type things like bulimia. And I was not in a good state. And I quit swimming because of the self-harming. I quit everything. So my life literally revolved around a computer and the games that I played on that computer. And at school, I tried to avoid people as much as possible, which honestly sounds like a good idea, but it was more to my detriment because I was obviously very vulnerable. But yeah, I went through a lot of difficulties. I found a sport that I loved. I worked at that. It took a lot of focus. It got rid of a lot of the anxiety that I had. And then I sort of started to progress in that and started to feel better about myself. But there was still that lingering depression and anxiety in the background that made life really difficult. And so, like, I don't like to mention it because it sort of makes me cringe inside, but there was many times in my life, maybe 2 or 3, where I'd attempted on my own life, and it was hard. I decided to go to uni and I thought that would help. First year was difficult. Second year was even more so difficult due to a breakup that I had, and it left me feeling very alone and isolated and stuff. And I went down into a slump of depression where I wouldn't go out in weeks. I wouldn't talk to anyone. I didn't have any friends. I had one person that I was friends with who, for some reason or not, decided to sort of leave me. And I went on a whole personal development journey over the course of like 2 or 3 years, where I was trying to dissect life and myself and my interactions to improve myself. And it was a long journey. I wrote about it every night for hours and hours over the course of about 2 years, and then implemented it when I went to Thailand and I was sort of in a group of people, a bit more sort of close in terms of proximity, and considering that we were the only British people there. And yeah, I came back. I still struggle quite a lot, but obviously my friendships helped get rid of the isolation to some extent. And ever since then, I've just found a passion for trying to help people. And I try to help people in what I do because it sort of keeps me afloat. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's my life.
That's your life in a nutshell. I mean, I appreciate how honest and open you're being because, you know, not all of that is, you know, easy to talk about. And, you know, I appreciate that you're kind of, you know, being very upfront about everything and, you know, all the struggles along the way. And so how old were you when you had your diagnosis? Were you like 10, 9 or 10 or something?
Yeah, 10 years old.
10, right, okay. So, I mean, you know, that must have, did you sort of almost feel like it was like a relief at that stage, or what, mm-hmm. did it take a while to sort of sink in?
Definitely. I think a little bit of both. Like, I didn't really think about it much post that, but at least it gave me something as a reason. And then obviously later on, it sort of helped me understand my life and myself a bit more.
Mm-hmm. And I can totally understand how, I mean, I wasn't subject to the bullying. I was quite, you know, I was able to kind of sink into the background in school. But school is such a difficult environment for anyone who is autistic or sensory or has Asperger's, anything like that. And, you know, like you say, all these social rules you have no idea about. And people come back from, you know, breaks and stuff and they've changed. And it's, you know, it must be so frustrating and, you know, kind of demoralizing to, I kind of feel it as well, you know, you don't know what's changed and what the rules are anymore, and children can be so cruel to each other, and you underestimate how people can change and stuff. And you know, I can kind of relate, but obviously not to some extent, but I do wish kind of schools were kind of safer places in that respect. And it's such a shame because you've gone on to study at uni and you're clearly very intelligent and clever, and at school, you know, maybe that went under the radar a bit because you were struggling, you know.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that, because, you know, people don't really, well, I mean, teachers and head teachers don't really focus on students unless they're falling behind, I suppose.
Exactly, unless you're kind of like naughty in a lesson or something like that. If you're quiet and you're hardworking, you're never really kind of picked up on. Exactly.
No, right. Unless you do something silly like I did.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, it's amazing that you've been able to, you know, despite your struggles, kind of channel your sort of interests into, you know, sport, and like you're a Commonwealth gold athlete. Like, I think we should say that more.
Yeah.
Like, that's huge.
Yeah, I don't know. That's it's like one of those things that I always feel a little bit like that's, if I say that, that's the only thing that I am, if that makes sense.
Okay, I see what you mean. I think you've got to shout about it because it's a big thing, but I know, like, you don't want it to define you in some ways, but I mean, you are a YouTuber, you are a public speaker, you're a podcaster, you're a, you know, activist for autism and mental health, and, you know, an athlete as well. That's a lot. You've got a lot going on there. you're doing a lot, you know, and you're definitely giving back in terms of, you know, the, like, kind of online community and stuff.
I'm glad, and I think I really do want to help people. It is as cheesy as it sounds, the main thing that sort of keeps me afloat every day, you know, when I don't feel like there's much point in getting up in the morning. I think about, you know, the kids that I work with at school, and I think about, you know, the people who don't have it as good as me and don't have those social skills, don't have a friend group, don't have a relationship or a job. And it really breaks my heart to hear about that. And now and again, I get messages from people that, yeah, it's awful, and there's just really nothing that you can do about it other than just try and raise awareness as much as possible and try and get it to the people that, you know, the big media people, so that they can implement it more, you know. But
and I know what you mean. Like, it's great to have, you know, that motivation and something to get up for in the morning. Like, it's important to have, you know, something to almost kind of focus Definitely. On. Is that so? You're working. Am I right in thinking you're working as a special education, like mm-hmm. teaching assistant?
So I I go into special needs schools and I do sort of general supporting there, but then I also go to mainstream schools to support kids with special needs who haven't been moved to special needs education.
Okay, so you're doing a bit of both, really. You're seeing both sides mm-hmm. of kind of education in terms of mainstream and kind of special needs sort of.
That's what I want
well.
To do. Yeah, I want to get an idea of it. So it's good to have personal experiences, but it's always good to try and experience mm-hmm. the whole spectrum, if you will, of experiences yes. of people on the spectrum.
Yeah. I mean, that must be huge in terms of, you know, you're giving back not only online, but in actual person as well, in terms of, you know, helping these children. But also, I mean, I imagine that you can kind of understand on their level what they're experiencing more than maybe another special needs teacher might if they didn't, you know, they weren't autistic.
Yeah, I think that there is limits to special needs education. I think the people who have the most experience with autistic kids usually are the ones that are the best, not the ones that know more about it or know a lot about teaching implementation and stuff. I feel like the best people are usually the ones that are very open-minded, genuinely kind, wanting to understand and wanting to work with that kid. Those are usually the people who are good at that job.
Mm-hmm. And are you sort of hoping to go on from being a teaching assistant to being like a kind of teacher? Do you want to work your way up in terms of teaching?
I want to be more on the side of like journalism and in the future, of course. And mm-hmm. I want to have a platform where I can raise these social issues and statistics that are around in autism to try and do something about it. But mm-hmm. my sort of special needs teaching is more of a job, sort of in an in-between job, but I've tried my best to make it as mm-hmm. relevant to my life goal as possible. So it's a difficult, like, it's a really difficult job, and I don't know why, like, sometimes I question it, but it's great to see positive changes in kids, and it does give me a bit more motivation to get up and stuff.
That's great. I mean, you know, you're helping out these kids, and I can imagine it is quite like difficult work, and it must be quite kind of, you know, it must take up a lot of your energy, but it must be really rewarding to, you know, see these, you know, children even just sort of, you know, understand where you're coming from and just sort of, you know, even just to be able to see them grow a little bit must be quite rewarding. But it's really interesting to hear that you want to go into journalism more. And, you know, I think we're missing, you know, that sort of journalism that fills in the gap of, you know, special needs and autism and, you know, mm-hmm. disability in general isn't, you know, it's not that,
we,
you know,
we need
seen in the media.
Neurodiversity as well as racial diversity, I think, definitely.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a little bit of a different sort of way of going about it. I did want to jump straight into a journalist job, but there wasn't really anything available at the time, and it's mm-hmm. I don't know how I'd feel to leave my current job. I always there's been times where I've worked with a kid for a few weeks and then developed quite a good bond with them, and then obviously had to leave because I'm not needed there. And sometimes that can be very difficult because I do get very attached to the kids that I'm working with. A lot of these kids, surprisingly, come from a lot of difficult backgrounds as well. I didn't realize just how many kids have sort of checkered backgrounds, even in the place that I'm in my area of the country. And not in checking as in a way they've done something like illegal or something, but you know, they've got family issues or they've had past traumas and stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's quite enlightening in that way.
Well, that's really interesting, you know. And okay, you're not working in journalism yet, but this is going to be, you know, fantastic experience. And you know, like my parents are always saying, like, it'll look great on your CV.
My parents do as well.
Yeah, it's like, oh, look great on your CV, more experience. But you know, the more people experience you have, and the more, you know, understanding you have, definitely like of different age groups as well, is really good. So what was I going to ask you? I was going to ask you more about your university, because you touched upon that a little bit. So how did you find kind of studying at uni? Did you live at uni?
I did live at uni. I did, yeah. I lived on campus, and I possibly picked the most low-quality place, low-quality campus. But it was, it was a bit sort of dodgy. Like the things didn't really work in the room, like the drawers didn't have handles, some of them, and all that kind of stuff. And obviously, because it was a communal kitchen and a communal bathroom, there was always difficulties around that, with people stacking up things. So I just resorted to sort of paying for the daily sort of meals and stuff that they did in the kitchen.
Okay.
But my particular sort of dorm was heavily infested with drugs. Like, it was definitely not the type of place that I would choose to live at. But it did give me a bit of experience with people who are like that. And Manchester, sadly, is a place where that happens a lot. But in terms of general university, I found it really difficult. Like, I liked the assignments and stuff, and I liked learning about it, but there comes a point at which when you have to do an exam, you could know everything under the sun, but if you can't interpret what they're asking you to do in the correct way and say it in the way that they want you to from that small question, it's difficult to get a good mark on it, unless the person knows you and knows autism. So that the academic side was hard, but I managed to get an honours.
That's great.
And I didn't find the social aspects very enjoyable at all. I like to be within a class, because it forces you to be with certain people all the time. Whereas I was just sort of drifting between lectures and working on my own. Couldn't really socialise with the people in my sort of living arrangements, for obvious reasons, and couldn't really find anyone to socialize with, you know, in uni. But it was difficult, yeah. And I said when I was info dumping you earlier that
info dumps are welcome here. It's all good.
I said in my long explanation about my life that it was tough, and I had a lot of periods of time where I was sort of shut indoors, isolated, didn't go out of my room for any other reason than to get food. I got to a point where I was having like constant panic attacks about five or six times a day, and I did manage to find some good friends, and obviously the main changing factor for me was going to Thailand and having that experience.
So what made you decide to go there? Was that sort of after uni you thought, you know, that was the sort of next kind of thing you wanted to do?
The funny thing is that was an impulsive thing. It was so ridiculously impulsive. It completely contrasts my personality at the time, because I wouldn't do anything impulsive, but, you know, it wasn't part of my character. And it was more of an act of desperation at the time, just to escape. And, you know, maybe if I've got a new environment, new sort of life, take a bit of a break from studying, then maybe I'll feel better. And obviously it has broadened my horizons a lot. It's got me to develop a lot of social skills, got me to think about my life and my meaning and all of that stuff. And it's given me a good understanding of the world as well, because I went backpacking for about 2 months around Southeast Asia with a mate.
And
it's not the most relaxing experience, to put it lightly, but it definitely gave me an appreciation for the world a bit more.
Wow. I mean, that, you know, that's quite a big thing to do, but like you said, you were kind of craving that
escape,
change, and yeah, and looking for something more. And I guess there's no better time to do that than, you know, just after you're studying, and, you know, you can have that sort of break. But that must have been quite sort of eye-opening in terms of, had you done that much traveling before or been abroad?
I've been abroad, really, but I'd never really been to places with the express intent of learning about people. When I was traveling, I quite often was the person out of the two of us that started interactions with other travelers, or started, you know, conversations with locals to learn about what's been going on in the culture and stuff. And with that sort of direction to learn, it made it a little bit different. I have been traveling before, and I've been to places with my family, but that was more of sort of a leisure type thing. And I wasn't very involved with it at all. And then other than that, there's the places that I traveled to with Taekwondo, mostly around Europe, but on one occasion I went to Romania, but yeah, it was different though.
I mean, it sounded like you definitely had a shift in terms of being able to approach people, and in terms of interacting with people, you know, kind of at university, you sounded more kind of, you know, you kept yourself to yourself sort of thing. And it sounds like you really like opened up, like, you know, traveling. And was that kind of because you were somewhere different and, you know, nobody knows you, and you were building kind of connections?
Yeah, I also think it's just, I'd never really been a part of a group. I mean, I might have been a part of a group when I was like 12, but that was more just so that I could sort of play games with some friends. It wasn't a close forming of bonds from living together with a group of people. And it was really the first group that I was involved with. And because there was such different people, you know, we had some people from London, some people from Yorkshire, some people from originally from Romania, some, you know, someone's from Australia. We had a big sort of melting pot of personalities in our group. And the more that I sort of talked to them and shared my opinions and listened to them, the more that I realized that, you know, being a part of a group doesn't have to be a bad thing, and that maybe I should give people a chance to explain their sides and be a little bit more open in that sense. And that sort of fed back into me. So now I just, you know, I can, you know, I'll go on to things and say things about my past that, you know, people wouldn't usually share, but it's something that I've wholeheartedly accepted at this point. And I don't see any other harm in sharing that with people.
No, exactly. And I think, you know, being yourself online, a lot of people aren't themselves online. And, you know, you see the best versions of their life and you see the good things. And actually, really, I think a lot of people are just seeking honest and, you know, upfront mm-hmm. people, aren't they, really? Especially in terms of, you know, if you're neurodiverse, if you're autistic, you know, just finding someone in the community who is open and says, yeah, I struggle every day and this is what I'm struggling with right now. But, you know, you see the good and the bad sort of thing. And I think that's sort of what you're doing on your many social media platforms, is you're showing, you know, what life is really like and the struggles, but also, you know, the great things as well about, you know,
yeah,
having a diagnosis.
I think there are many great things about being autistic. I think mm-hmm. the main thing for me in the videos and the podcast and the social media stuff is that I'm still open to grow a bit more. I'm not fixed in my beliefs as much as some people on Instagram could be like. And I like to listen to people and I like to have conversations with people. And although I do a lot of videos about how to cope with situations, how to better yourself, I am giving those videos as from my previous experience and from all that experience that I've had. And the thing is that, you know, I'm mm-hmm. only 23 still, so I'm still open to be proved wrong on things that I say or things that I think. And I think that's mm-hmm. a big part of why people sort of stick with me, maybe. I don't know, I'm just speculating. You can prove me wrong on that opinion.
No. So when, just as a bit of background, when did you start kind of your online presence? What made you sort of start it, and what sort of, how many years have you been going? What, you know,
I started on YouTube. I originally had a gaming channel, as mm-hmm. all sort of a lot of people do. Yep. And I got up to about 164 subscribers, but the quality of them were absolutely shocking. So I decided at some point that I wanted to publish my experiences. This was more of a platform for sharing parts of my life or sharing the difficulties that I had, because I didn't really have many people to share this with, or I didn't feel comfortable enough to share this with people directly. And so it was more of a voicing platform for me. It was a way to sort of get my pain and struggles out and sort of take them out of my head. And it was more of sort of like a counseling service for me at the start. And then as it got sort of bigger and as people started to start following me and stuff, I realized that, you know, maybe I should, I've grown quite a lot over these years, and I've learned a lot of things and come up with some ideas about autism and mental mm-hmm. health. And maybe I should sort of be a bit more specific and create videos around a certain topic. And sort of rolled and, you know, now my videos are completely different to the videos that I had before, which were just basically about my experiences rather than, you know, trying to offer help or anything.
No, that's a really interesting journey. And I think I can relate to that as well, because I first sort of started out kind of writing a blog on my Instagram, and it was really like a counseling service as well. Like, you were kind of doing it to be like testing the waters, see if anyone else mm-hmm. feels the same, like, you know, do people relate to me? And then it sort of grows and you're like, oh, okay, people get me. And that's like a really big thing, isn't it? Just to have people that understand, and people who just, like, I get messages where people are like, you know, you make me feel less alone. And that's huge. Like, it means so much to me that people can relate to, you know, both of our content, and they see themselves in it. And I think that's, you know, especially if you're doing sort of videos and stuff like that, being able to connect, you know, a person to, like, you know, their voice, and just seeing how they live their life is a really big thing.
There is a lot of utility in having, you know, just people that are willing to share negative and positive experiences just for the benefit of bringing people together. And, you know, comments are the best thing about YouTube for me, because it really gives me a the subscribers and stuff that I have just write these massively long paragraphs that I feel like most people would probably just skim through. But these paragraphs are really detailed and they have their own experiences, and I learn a lot. I learn a lot. There's this one particular person called David, who's been a fan of, I don't want to say fan, that sounds really...
no, go for it.
He's been a supporter of mine for a long time, and he's sort of in his like 50s, 60s, and... you know, obviously being autistic and going through that period of time where there wasn't all that support, getting an idea of the similarities between my experience and his, and sort of comparing them is always, you know, there's always something to gain from that and something new to learn.
Yeah. I think that's also the great thing about it, is that you're connecting with people from different backgrounds, and especially like different age groups or people who are kind of late to diagnosis. And it's really interesting to hear about these people's lives and, you know, how they've come around to understanding themselves. And I mean, some people wait, you know, 40 or 50 years to find out that they're autistic. And I just think, oh, you know, I waited 25 years. That was enough. Like, I mean, obviously you've lived your life and you haven't known any different, but to not sort of know that, you know, you're not alone and you're not weird or different or, you know, that sort of thing.
It is.
It's quite big, isn't it?
It's more of like you have a reason to why you're so different to everybody. I think just having like a basic, you know, sort of understanding and having basic support around you in school and stuff is quite a good thing for when you grow up, because you know, if there was a lot of times where in secondary school where I'd have meltdowns and stuff, and if I wasn't diagnosed autistic or if they didn't have any sort of special needs provisions, I would probably just be kicked out of school, or I would probably just retreat to the toilets for hours and hours, because I find everything too overwhelming. So having that level of support and understanding of myself is a good thing.
That's really good to hear as well, that, you know, despite your struggles, you were sort of, you know, supported in terms of, you know, educations and maybe kind of exams and stuff. Did you have like extra time and stuff like that?
I always got up to the last second of the extra time.
Me too. Like, put your pen down.
It makes you paranoid, doesn't it? It's like, did I answer what they asked me? I've highlighted it. I've gone over it about 5 times. I think this is what they want of me. Then you get the results back and they're like, be more specific to the question. I was like, what are you talking about? Why don't you...
That's like what you said about kind of university and stuff, like it's processing the question, and I have to highlight the question beyond belief to understand.
Yeah, they could just say write about this system or write about that system. And the funny thing is that the exams that I did the best on, where I got like upwards of 80% on, were those exams that specifically asked you to describe a certain thing, certain pathway, something that a lecture that we've learned. And yeah, it's definitely not built for autistics exams. They're just, not at all. I do get a lot of sort of mitigating circumstances for my mental health and stuff, which helped a lot, because it was very difficult to get through the days, and it was very difficult to manage my emotions and make sure that I'm in for exams, not panicking and not melting down. It was, the support that I had at uni was good. Maybe a little bit more counselling, but, you know, that's just the way that funding goes for these things.
Yeah. I was going to say to you, you know, in terms of counselling, have you had much? Have you kind of gone through the whole NHS trying that and done your own sort of private stuff? Or, you know, have you found counselling
for about 5 or 6 years during my teenage years up until I was about 18, 19. They kept me on for a little bit longer because they felt like I needed some support still. But the counselling did least squat. Did nothing. Absolutely nothing. It gave me a place to talk, but I was confronted with a person who didn't really get me and kept trying to push these strange ways of coping with stress on me that just didn't really get to the issue. And you know what, to be honest, looking back on it, I was very closed and I didn't want to tell them about anything, and because I didn't know them, which is a big thing, you know, because if you don't like someone, you don't want to talk to them about your innermost pains and thoughts, especially when you're a teenager.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You need to trust the person. I see what you mean. Kind of, I've also found the same with counselling. It just brings everything to the surface and all your feelings. And I just come home and be like overwhelmed with, you know, having brought things up again, and kind of, like you said, you've got to trust the person in order to open up. And I think also in terms of counselling, you know, unless they are specialists, they're not going to understand your kind of autistic traits and stuff like that. I've had a therapist say before, you know, I can't take you further. I can't take you on anymore because you're displaying these autistic traits. And it's just a bit crushing. You're like, but I'm here, you know.
I think this is a really big problem. For one of the main problems that I feel like we need to change. There is no specialist counsellors for autistic people. And the specialist counsellors are like in London, or they're in like, they're massively expensive, which is ridiculous considering the unemployment rate among autistic people rather. And
yeah,
you know, I couldn't even find one. My mum couldn't even find one when I was younger. And we had the funds to do it, but it was just too busy and they just didn't have any openings. So it definitely is one of the major problems with how society is run. It just feels like with so many issues around autism, it just feels like everything's just swept under the rug. And it's just, you know, people lump in autism with you're disabled, so you must feel bad, rather than I'm autistic, I get along with life pretty well, but I have these bad mental health issues. They don't see it like that now. They just see it as you're autistic. Oh no, poor you. You know.
But there's so many varying a spectrum or however you want to call it, that everyone is different. You might have someone who's autistic and can hold down a job and seems, you know, to be functioning just fine. But actually, you know, someone like me who can hold down a job, I still want to talk to someone. I still want, you know, I still struggle every day, even though I'm not showing it. Whereas, you know, someone who is more, you know, higher functioning, or however you want to say it, you know, who struggles every day, they, you know, I get what you're saying. It's just not accessible, is it?
I think a good way to put it into perspective, like I think about 1 or 2% of the population is on the autistic spectrum, and 1 in 3 people with autism have severe mental health conditions. That's a lot of people, and there's not a lot of services available to do that and to deal with that. And it's awful, and it just baffles me to why it's not such a major issue, but it's not, is it?
No. And I also find, in terms of going to the doctors and, you know, having mental health issues and being autistic, is you have to try so many antidepressants.
I'm on two right now.
Antipsychotics. Same here. But did it take you a while to find?
I still don't know if it's working.
Right.
Like, I don't think it's working well enough. But it has taken me a while. I found I'm on citalopram right now, and I think it's working best because I've tried quite a lot of antidepressants, and my mum, my family member, has been on them for a long time, and it's worked for them, and they didn't have many side effects. So I thought, hey, this might be a good idea. But anxiety is not managed very well. There's nothing really that I can do about it. But I have been recently sort of buying like CBD to help with it. They definitely just does help, and it helps with sleep as well. And I find that it makes life just a little bit easier to cope with, and it keeps my brain a little bit less active than it usually is in its sort of hyperactive state. But it's also a matter of money as well, because obviously I've got to buy it. It's not a prescription. I've got a prescription, and then I've got to get, you know, I've got to pay for exercise to keep me happy. I've got to pay for, you know, sort of, you know, magnesium supplements and all of that stuff. And I've got to pay for CBD, which is, if you want something that's effective and, you know, good enough and strong enough to work on someone, then you've got to pay for that, and you've got to fork out for it. And it's a lot of issues with money, to be honest, at this stage.
Yeah. I mean, even just a prescription is like £9, and that's just for one medication, isn't it? And if you need it, you know, monthly or every 2 weeks, it just adds up so quick.
I think there is something that you can do with prescriptions. Have you ever heard of a prescription prepayment plan? You should definitely look that up, because you can pay about £27 for 3 months, and all of your prescriptions within that time are free.
Ooh, that's a good idea.
Just pretty to much,
like,
but
it, like pay you, ahead you can almost, sort of
get
thing.
Prescriptions every week that will cost you £16 or something, but it would all just come down to £27 for every 3 months. Yeah. I only knew about it recently, so it's, you can get yearly ones as well.
Okay. So even just that would just take the, you know, pressure off a bit.
I think getting that prepayment certificate would be good.
Yeah, I think so too. And it's just also, like, you know, keeping on top of like stuff like that, you know, like making sure you order it in enough time and stuff like that. And, you know, as autistic people, we have enough to like remember and, you know, just cope with in daily life. And just like keeping on top of all these little things is, I don't think,
there's,
you know,
executive functioning.
It goes slightly unrecognized.
And then also, if you've got mental health conditions, the low motivation or distractibility or from anxiety and stuff.
Also, I'm just awful at remembering if I've just taken something or not.
Yeah, it's like, horrible when that happens, isn't it? Because you feel like you should take it, but should I? Yeah. I didn't know if I did. Should I take another one? But I can't take another one, because even if I did, then I'm gonna have like a serotonin syndrome or something.
Yeah, you're just gonna have like twice as much. Oh, no, I'm not the only one who's just like, did I just take this?
Fairly frequently. This is kind of when you've taken it for so long in your life. It's just like, so it's like seven or 8 years for me being on some form of drug, and it's
it's mad, isn't it? I've been on sort of antidepressants since I was 16, and I've, like, last year I started to feel, you know, slightly more stable, and I went to them and I was like, I'd really like to kind of start dropping down off, you know, one of the medications I'm on too. And they were like, oh, why? I was like, because ideally I don't really want to be on them for the rest of my life. And if I can, you know, it would be great if I could, you know, eke it down slowly. I'm not, you know, stopping it or anything like that. And they were really like, oh, wow. I was like, well, I've been on it for years and you've never reviewed it. And stuff like that, you just sit on medication sometimes, unless you sit in front of a doctor and say, you know, I'm struggling, I'd like to up my dose, or, you know, I'm doing okay, I'd like to come off it.
I think in every case, people are different, you know, and I've tried to come off medication before, and it's always had disastrous results for me. I think my sort of physiological level of whatever hormones make you happy are just so low that it's ridiculous. Like, and I have tried coming off them, couldn't do it. Despite all the work that I, you know, have done to improve myself and build a life for myself and cover every single aspect of well-being and happiness that I can, I still feel awful. And I don't think, I think if I was going to come off antidepressants, it would be a long time in the future for me, definitely. But of course, like, you know, there are always ways that I can improve more. It's just currently it's not really something that I feel like I can do.
But at least in a way you're aware of that, and you've kind of come to terms with the idea that, you know, at the moment it is helping you, and at the moment, you know, okay, you're still trying to find the right levels and stuff like that, but you kind of know that it's not the right time for you to come off anything. And I think even for me, I'm still on both. I mean, one of them slightly less, but I'm not, you know, I'd love to not be on any.
Have you ever noticed that when you are on antidepressants, you know, because with autism, it makes it difficult to perceive and notice and understand your own emotions. Antidepressants make that worse, don't they?
Yeah.
I find it so difficult, like, so difficult just to know what I'm feeling. And when I'm on antidepressants, I can't reach the highs of happiness that I could do when I'm not. It makes you feel a little bit
like a
psychopath or something, because you just, obviously you're not, and if your emotions affect your behavior and all of that stuff, and you have a lot of empathy towards people, but you don't perceive your emotions as much, and it can be quite difficult sometimes for me, I think. Would you agree with that?
I think so, definitely. And when I had my autism assessment, the assessor actually like said something that I didn't like realize about myself. I don't know if you've heard of like alexithymia. Like, it means like you have like the inability to identify or like describe your feelings, sort of things. And she really got that impression from me. And it was only once you read about it where it's like, yeah, you don't have words for your feelings, and it's very hard to put how you're feeling into words. And she said that might be, there isn't like a proper test for or anything, but that might be something that I experience. It's worth reading about, and I definitely get what you're saying, because you don't know what emotion sometimes, and you don't know how to label it.
In general, like, the only two real emotions that I mostly feel is depression and anxiety. But it sounds like I'm being a bit defeatist in that fashion, but it's more like I base how my day is based on how not so bad my mental health is. And obviously I do feel excitement and you know, happiness on the odd occasion, as much as everyone else would, I suppose, but just not to a considerable extent, or not enough to surpass all those negative emotions.
And it's hard to hold on to that feeling as well, that, you know, when there is a good day or a good moment, you forget how it feels.
Backtrack and think about how something felt for you in the past. Or sometimes when I feel I have a good day, I'm like, what is wrong with me? Like, I'm fine. Like, I don't have depression, anxiety. I'm just being over dramatic. And then when I'm in complete lows of depression,
I'm like,
how have I ever been happy? You know, how the opposites. Yeah.
No, I totally get what you mean. So what, going slightly more kind of your life at the moment, so what kind of brings you joy at the moment? What
my passions?
What do you enjoy in life? What are your passions?
I think, you know, as I've said, my granddad passed away when I was in Thailand, and he said some things to me before he passed away.
Okay.
And he told me to stay in Thailand. He told me to keep on learning, and he told me to help people.
Oh, wow.
So that has been my motto, basically, mm-hmm. for all that I do. You know, I've decided not to sort of play around with the idea of early death or anything, and that's sort of out of my mind now. And so in terms of feeling joy, my passions just are around that. That's what I do. I've taken on board what he says, and I agree with it, and it's a really big driving factor for me. I've got his ring that he wore when he was from about the age of 22, which is around the time that I got it, and I'm wearing that, and it sort of gives me a reminder of my sort of what I should do and what I'm drawn to. But in terms of like things that I like to do and brings my attention and makes me sort of distracts me from real life, I like writing. I'm writing a book currently, which is a fictional novel.
Mm-hmm. I saw you started an Instagram.
@official_blackbird.
Cool. I'm following.
It used to be called Heartlands until I realized just how many books and series and films are called Heartlands. So it's kind of ruined that name for me. But it's a funny one. And I'm trying to keep it as something that I enjoy doing. I'm not, because I have a tendency of sort of planning out and saying, mm-hmm. I'm going to do this amount every day. Whereas it's more like, oh, I've got some time here. I could just wind down, do some writing. And I have a rough outline, but I don't have a set in stone plan. So the writing is more of a, it's more exciting because even I don't know what's happening. So I'm just going like, make it up as I go along and trying to stick to the story as much as possible, pretty much.
You're going with the flow. That sounds good. That sounds less kind of pressure on yourself.
Other than that,
you know, something that you can enjoy.
I enjoy talking, so I enjoy things like this. And I enjoy going on radio shows and any opportunity for me to talk, but not so much. And I'm not so much into the editing side of it. I find it very tedious. So I'm happy at some point that I won't have to do that. And I can just talk and people can edit it for me. But, and then other than that,
that's the dream.
I box now. So I sort of damaged my knee when I was in Thailand on a moped.
Okay.
It's another story, but, so I sort of quit doing taekwondo and I've been boxing to sort of pass the time, but I've actually got quite into it, and the coaches there want to sort of take me further with that. But
okay.
I always enjoy combat sports, so it brings me a lot of joy, I guess, if joy is the right word for a sport that's all about bludgeoning people in the head. I don't know. Yeah.
I know what you mean. Like, it's like a kind of
definitely
release of energy, and I mean that's a lot of, you know, different things that you enjoy and a range of things that you are, you know, skilled in and good at. And it's great that you're kind of finding out what suits you and what you kind of want to do more of. And it sounds like you've tried a bit of everything in terms of sports and hobbies and things like that. And just being able to, like, you know, write a bit, a book is, you know, that must be really interesting and nice in a way that it's not like a school assignment and it's something you can come back to every so often.
Definitely.
And properly enjoy rather than feel that pressure all the time. So in terms of kind of, I know we should probably wrap this up, in terms of, like, you know, daily life at the moment, how are you coping with, you know, you kind of autism and stuff like that, and how, you know, relationships and friends and stuff like that.
I think definitely in terms of friendships. I mean, my friendships are usually very fragmented anyway. I don't usually make friends with groups. I make friends with individual people. And so it's quite hard to get people together or And especially with work, it's hard to organize a date for some people to travel up to me or for me to travel down to them. And so it's very difficult in that sense. And I don't have particularly a lot of close friends in Harrogate. And in terms of that, I do call them and we interact and all of that kind of stuff. But I think I definitely need to develop some friendships. But I guess the people at boxing would probably be my, sort of loose friendship group, I suppose. In terms of relationships, yeah. I have a girlfriend right now and she's awesome and she's really great. And so sometimes I think I've got to a point where I know what I'm capable of and I know what I can't work on and I know what I can work on in terms of myself and how I interact with people. And I am sort of at a very stable point where I can say, I've done enough work on myself. I feel like I'm about 10, 20 years older than everybody. It's hard to find someone who is on the same level of maturity as me. So it's good that I've, found that girlfriend. That sounds horrible. I don't know how much other way to say it.
That girlfriend. Yeah, I know definitely. What you meant. You found the right person for you. And that's like half the battle, isn't it? Is finding someone who will accept you for you and that you don't have to change for. And, relationships are really difficult anyway, if you're autistic. And just having someone who's, understanding and accepting and willing to kind of,
I think
learn more. Yeah.
In terms of mental health, I'm sort of at a point where I've accepted that I feel a certain way on certain days. It never gets any easier. It never gets easier to cope with the symptoms of the illnesses. But I have a good idea of what it's going to feel like and what I'm going to have to do and all of that. It's just trying to sort of push through those bad periods of time. Especially like during the winter periods and stuff. But I've got my goal and I've got my reason to be around. So I'm not going anywhere as of now.
That's great. That's so good. And I'm glad to hear that you feel like you're at a more kind of stable point and that, I know what you mean about feeling way more mature than you, like your actual age and stuff like that. But that's kind of, I think a lot of autistic people are probably like that. You learn so much from other people and take on so many behaviors and stuff like that, that you feel like you've lived so much longer. So I guess we should probably,
it's up to you. Like if you want to ask any more questions or anything, I'm happy to,
I think the only other thing that was on my kind of list of stuff to mention was about you being a fidget bomb ambassador, and I didn't know if you wanted to talk about that and something you're using
it's
every
kind
day
of, kind
and...
of funny because I was contacted by a lady called Anna Kennedy. I don't know if you know her, but she's a very successful author. She's an OBE. She's set up two special needs schools. She's very big person in the world of autism, and she asked me to sort of come onto a radio show in Covent Garden, London, and that was awesome.
Saw that on Twitter,
and there were a few people on a few sort of companies on her page that she was supporting, so I checked into one of them, which was Fidget Bomb, and sort of shot them a message and asked about the product and stuff and whether they'd like to come talk about it on my podcast. And yeah, they sent me one of these products, which is basically like a replacement for a weighted blanket. And it's the best way that I can think of to describe it is sort of like a very stretchy compression sock for your bed. And it's so much more cooler. It's
okay,
like as in like temperature wise. And it's cool, of course. And it's it's very stretchy and comfortable,
yeah,
and definitely. It doesn't restrict your movements. And I just thought that it was such a good idea. Like, it's such an ingenious idea, because it's really hard to travel with weighted blankets. They're not always the most comfortable. And I've got one and I just never use it because it's just useless. Because I just feel like something's crushing me rather than compressing me. And so, I met up with Mel, which I believe is the company director. And she asked me if I wanted to become an ambassador for Fidget Bum. And of course, I think it's a great idea. And I feel like it would give me a lot of opportunity to work with them in the future and do some sort of more media type things and go on and talk about the product on like TV shows and stuff in the future, hopefully. But yeah, it's great. And I think anybody who's listening, I think you should definitely go check out Fidget Bum if you struggle with sleep, which I know is a big issue in the world of autism.
It really is. I'll definitely have to check them out. I sleep with a weighted blanket, but I get too hot just all the time. And I feel like if I could get the same level of compression with
testers, you know,
this Fidget Bum thing, then that would be good.
If you get in contact, they might want you to do like a testimonial or something, or they might just give you a discount or something for it.
Okay. They're going to hook me up. Okay. Oh, I'll have to have a look, because it's something that I've heard about and also like seen you talking about and stuff.
Yes.
Yeah, that does. It would be a lot better, especially in summer.
You can wear it with the blanket and stuff, so it's not like you'll get hot or cold or anything.
Okay.
No worries.
Yeah. Okay.
Repping the brand.
Well, thanks for letting us know about that. in terms of repping the brand, did you, as we kind of wrap up, do you want to kind of mention where people can find you on the internet and, you know, kind of
I think the main port of call would probably be my Instagram page, which is at Asperger's Growth. And I've got like a link tree sort of link that sort of take you to all the, you know, the YouTube stuff and the podcast and, you know, the Fidget Bum stuff and all of that.
Okay.
But then, you know, if you just want to go straight to the other things, there's my main page on YouTube, Asperger's Growth. And then on Anchor, Spotify, Apple Podcasts is the 40 Yachty podcast. And then obviously I've got my sort of general social media on Facebook and Twitter, and they're all at Asperger's Growth. So it's quite easy to get in contact.
Okay, so I better wrap it up. I mean, it was really nice to talk to you, and thank you for being so honest and really open. It means a lot, and I think it shows, you know, how genuine a person you are.
It always lifts me up, you know, chatting about what I'm passionate about and stuff. So thank you very much for the opportunity.
No worries, and good luck with all your kind of, you know, journalism and writing books and stuff like that. I'm excited to see your new your books kind of potential on Instagram and stuff. I'll be following along. Cool. Okay, so I guess we should
see you later, guys.
So thanks for listening, and tune in next time.